Hey everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Mason Avenue's Minor League Podcast. I am Steve Seifler, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos and Ken Lavin and Thomas Henderson. How's everyone doing this week?
I'll tell you something, Steve. I was doing better as of Thursday.
Yes.
Yeah. I honestly couldn't even, like, come up with a good promote extend trade this week because I just too depressed. Freaking Mets, freaking Braves. It's just depressing me too much. Obviously, the season is over now. Syracuse, they kind of ran a little bit later. AAA did. Their last series against the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs, it's done and over. They won the first game. The second game got canceled because of rain and also because who cares. And then they lost the last game. So the book is officially closed on the 2022 minor league season. Nothing scientific, but on a scale of like 1 to 10, how would you rate the season in terms of, you know, your enjoyment of everything?
You mean the minor league season?
Yeah. From, you know, everybody, you know, from the complex up.
Probably somewhere in the middle, like because it's very easy to be harsh because the upper minors were so bad, but the lower minors were legitimately fun and good. So, you know, it's hard. So B feels high, but a C feels low, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's somewhere in, I know that that's just C plus B minus range, but it's somewhere in that area just because, like, the lower minors was legitimately exciting. But it just got real nasty at the top of it. Just real nothing to care about.
I'd go a little bit higher than that, but generally the same sentiment, right? Like, that's what this team was this year. And if we want to incorporate, if we want to put in part of this the newly drafted guys, like, then, like, I'm very excited by the talent that was incorporated in and what we saw from them. But I don't know that that's fair to count in this grade yet. Like, I'm left with I'm as down as I am on the major league side and what they will be next year at this point, I'm very interested and optimistic about the minor league side for next season.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
Yeah, they're going to be – you can see the seed has been planted, you know, now it's starting to sprout and you could see the framework for some really good stuff in the future. And we got glimpses of it with St. Lucie and Brooklyn. So hopefully the good trends continue.
If these trends continue.
All right. So just going to throw out some, you know, some names now between all of the domestic teams. So the FCL Mets, St. Lucie Mets, Brooklyn Cyclones, Binghamton Rumble Pony, Syracuse Mets. Out of everybody on those teams, who do you think played the most games?
I do not like... Carlos Cortez is the name that comes to mind first for me, which I said before we had to go on a bit of a technical pause there, but I do not think that's the answer. Who's even on this roster? Like, I don't...
It could be someone like we have no... We'll never guess in a million years.
I'm going to stick with Mauricio out of, I don't know, consistency.
I'm going to say Travis Blankenhorn.
I don't know. It's going to be, I don't even have a guess. Probably Blankenhorn's a good one, though. Because I can't even think of who played a lot. Like, all these dudes played a lot that were kind of in the middle of the system.
All right, so the player that played the most games, got into the most games, is Luke Ritter. He played 126 games at Binghamton and Syracuse this year. Now, who had the most at-bats?
At-bats or plate appearances?
At-bats.
Then Mauricio.
Mauricio.
Yeah.
Because he's allergic to walks.
It is indeed Ronnie Mauricio.
Hey, there we go.
509 at-bats in Binghamton.
And how many plate appearances?
Oh, I didn't even write that down. Probably 509.
541.
Yeah, that's not great.
24 walks.
Who had the best batting average?
Alex Ramirez was like in the running for this early and then fell off.
It's going to be someone in the low minors.
Yeah.
Like De Los Santos or something.
I could see that. He's fast. Yeah, yeah.
Like I could see him getting like a lot of cheap, like infield singles and stuff like that.
It is Brett Beatty.
Oh, yeah.
315 average with Binghamton and Syracuse.
And Beatty like had a rough start that we were all wringing our hands over, and then just started absolutely murdering the ball. So that tracks.
Here's an odd one. Who had the most intentional walks, which is not something you see too much in the minor leagues?
Alvarez. I'm gonna say like Daniel Palka just to be different, but Alvarez would make sense.
Yeah, Alvarez.
It is actually a four-way tie. Alvarez is one of them. It's a four-way tie between Mark Vientos, Francisco Alvarez, Dom Smith, and Gosuke Kato with
what?
One of these does not belong.
I would not have guessed Gosuke Kato.
That's super funny.
I'm honestly surprised Palka's above some of the other names there, or not on that. Some of those names are above Palka, given how well he played in AAA this year. But you know,
well, it's intentional walk, so it's a kind of like a situational. I mean, I don't know why you would be walking Gosuke Kato. Like, who you're gonna pit? Who's hitting after him that you would rather face? But I don't know. Most home runs.
The is that one Palka?
It might be Palka, yeah.
Or is it Alvarez?
No, I would say Palka because Alvarez missed.
Yeah, that's true.
In August or that's September.
True. Didn't Vientos hit like 30?
It was Francisco Alvarez.
Oh shit!
Wow. 27 home runs between Binghamton and Syracuse, which is impressive because he did miss some time and he was kind of. The thing is, like the first month with Syracuse, when he wasn't really playing that well, all he was doing is basically either walking or hitting home runs. So, this one I think is fairly easy. Most stolen bases.
The dude in the not Dominguez, the other one, De Los Santos or De La Cruz, whichever.
I know.
What did he end the season or something? On. Yeah,
he had 70 stolen bases.
Yes,
St. Lucie, which is pretty impressive.
That rule that you can't pick off or something, right?
Yeah.
They changed the rules.
16 homers, 70 steals, a 130 weighted runs created plus, and a 32% strikeout rate. Damn.
That'll play. All right, we'll move over to pitching now. Who had the best ERA in the system among starting pitchers?
Jose Buto. I don't think that's actually the answer. Cause he got like shelled his first time around in AAA, right? But then he had the really good start at the end. He wasn't great in AA either. There's no pitching in this system, Steve.
No.
It's gonna be someone random. Like that's definitely a random one.
It is definitely someone random.
I got nothing then.
Joelmy Ramirez, who had a 0.78 ERA with the FCL Mets and St. Lucie.
Oh, that doesn't count. Yes, international arm who signed for 10K and none of us have ever heard of.
Most strikeouts.
Most strikeouts. That one might be Buddha. Hamill probably didn't pitch enough innings. Vassell wouldn't have pitched enough innings.
Seymour got traded.
And wasn't good until they traded him. Funny how that works. Yeah, I'll go with Buto for that one.
All right, one Buto. Who else you guys got?
These pitching ones are rough because there's just nothing.
I'm going to go with Buto, too.
Yeah, it has to be almost.
Nobody's
right.
Coming to mind.
It was not Jose Buto. It was Dominic Hamill.
Oh.
145 strikeouts with St. Lucie and Brooklyn.
You know, I guess that makes sense because he was probably at a level, and I know he had stuff to work on, but he was probably too good for the levels he was at. He was quite good for Brooklyn, I'm realizing. Jeez.
Yeah, he had a stretch where he definitely settled down. Who had the most saves in the system this year?
That is something I pay zero attention to.
And honestly, this is very anecdotal doing the minor league reports and stuff, but I feel like there was no regular closers.
Yeah, there really weren't.
Like, I feel like random guys always got, like, an inning and a two and two-thirds save or whatever. Like, there wasn't like, a Riley Gilliam who pitched the ninth every day for it.
Might have been, like, Eric Orsi if he didn't get hurt. I'm going to say, like, Bryce Montes to Oka, maybe?
I don't think
good
he had saves.
I don't think he did either.
No. It was Grant Hartwig.
Oh, that's a good call.
He had a grand total of 13 saves, which led the system.
Exactly. Like, they just didn't really have those guys, which I don't care in the minors. Like,
and even more amazing, I think, is that his 13 saves led the system, and he pitched this year with St. Lucie, Brooklyn, Binghamton, and Syracuse.
And he's on the AFL roster now, too.
Yeah, yeah.
The man just wants a break, please.
Who pitched the most innings? Who was the iron horse of the Mets pitching?
Player? I'm just going to keep saying Jose Buto until one of these is Jose Buto.
I don't remember him getting hurt, so it might be him, actually.
Go with Dominic Hamill, I guess, since he was the answer on the other one.
Are we going to learn from our previous No learning has occurred.
No. We don't do
that. Okay. Finally, it is Jose Buto.
Yeah, there you go.
He pitched 27 games, 25 starts, and he pitched a grand total of 127 innings. Last one. Who threw the most wild pitches?
Levi David?
Oh, good call.
That's a good call.
It was Levi David.
Yes!
16 wild pitches in 14.2 innings.
Is that healthy good stuff and no command.
Sorry, what? 14 innings? Jesus Christ, you're not kidding.
Nope.
Anyone want to know his single A line? 11.2 innings. I'm proceeding, even though no one answered that in the affirmative. 11.2 innings. 11.57 K9. That's good. 18.51 walks per 9 and a 10.03 ERA.
How many hits did he end up allowing? Like, only like 5 or something?
Two! Five, two. Five across two levels. So he gave up two hits.
Unhittable. Unhittable. the unhittable Levi David.
I'm so disappointed that curve your enthusiasm is not going to work out.
Yeah, that was something.
That's wild. I didn't realize it was that many. Mm-hmm. 16.
I think he also had a couple of books too, for good measure.
Oh boy.
Like, literally every single negative thing that he could have done as a pitcher, he did, and did a lot.
Like, how is this even possible?
Yeah, it's I don't understand. Like, I understand being wild, but there's just a difference. And like, wild pitches, they're not pass balls. It's not the catcher's fault. Like, this is him just throwing it all over the stadium, except at the catcher. Just boggles my mind.
Kara Swisher here. You may know me as the person who made Mark Zuckerberg sweat, pushed Kim Kardashian to talk dollars, or got Secretary Mayor Pete Buttigieg to eat a juicy strawberry live on stage. Okay, that one was awkward. But that's what I like to do, make powerful people comfortable with being uncomfortable. Now I'll be doing that on my new show from New York Magazine, On with Kara Swisher. We'll bring you news and the newsmakers I'm paying attention to, and we'll do it twice a week on Mondays and Thursdays. Go check it out, On with Kara Swisher, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so starting next week, you know, we'll analyze all the different affiliates and go over how the seasons, all their seasons went individually and everything like that. But before we do that, I wanted to go back to March and go over our predictions, our preseason predictions for the year. At the end of the month of March, right before the season started, we made some predictions. Some were mild, some were spicy, but it's always fun to go back and see what we got right and what we got wrong. So that's what we're going to do this week. So does anyone want to volunteer? I'll just start off, or
I'll just start off. Do you have our predictions written down in front of you, Steve?
Yeah, all right. I do.
Okay.
All right, so my first prediction was that Jake Mangum was going to be a top 10 prospect in the system. And we ranked him 14 coming into the season. He missed a couple of months of the season due to a back injury. And he ended up posting a 112 WRC plus with Binghamton and Syracuse, and, you know, had above average defense in center field. I'm going to go with a push here. I'm going to give myself a push because in the top 10, there's four guys that are gone. JT Ginn, Nick Plummer, Khalil Lee, and Jalen Palmer. They're gone. They're not going to be in the top 10. You know, three of those slots, I think, are going to automatically be filled by the Mets' top three draft picks from the season. So it is a toss-up if Mangum slides ahead of some of the other guys that have had solid years and might be moving up.
I think your sentiment with this one is correct because he was good, but yeah, I don't think he's a top 10 prospect in the system at the moment. He's weirdly in the same spot.
Look at our top 25 though, and a couple of guys that would be around the area. Like, is Hayden Sanger going to be around there? No, he's not moving up.
No, there's some guys who are moving out too.
Eric Orsi.
No.
Jose Budo, maybe.
But all, like, I would say Alvarez is still there. Beatty,
yeah,
Riccio, everyone, Vientos. I'd still probably rank Allen ahead. Ramirez, certainly. Ziegler. I'd probably put Hamill ahead of him. Consuegra belongs in that discussion. Junior Tillian, and then the draft picks. I still think he's going to be in that same 12 to 14 range, I think.
Probably, but I'd want to, and who knows who they trade by the time we make the list.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big thing, too.
That's that, like, because we're not going to make it until the offseason is well underway, so who knows what they do before we even start on the thing.
I don't know, it'll probably make us mad.
Oh, definitely. Here's something that'll make you mad. Lucas, here's your prediction.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Plummer will have 150 league average or better at bats.
It started off so well. Like, he was playing really well. At AAA, got that call up, hit a big home run, and it just all fell apart. And it's such a stark difference. I wonder if there was an injury in there or something. But yeah, that's a miss. Womp womp.
Yep, he had a total 29 at bats and a 63 WRC plus.
Ba-ding. Oh well.
Ken. Your prediction is the Mets will draft at least three top 10 2023 prospects in the 2023 draft.
Real bold stuff there.
some outlets updated their top 20, their top hundreds. MLB Prospect Pipeline and Baseball America did. And they only included Kevin Parada, who is 37 by MLB and 49 by Baseball America. So it's a slight lean towards a no, but you'll get a push because, you know, not everyone has done their...
Would we all have them in our top 10?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Top three. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Williams, Parada, Tidwell, no question. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a correct... I think Ken nailed that.
Next, Thomas. Oh, you said that Brett Beatty will hit more fly balls.
Did he?
He did.
Yeah.
He had a 21.9 fly ball percentage in 2021 with Brooklyn and Binghamton, and he had a 26.7 rate in this past season with Binghamton, Syracuse, and the Mets. So pretty sure that 26.7 is more than 21.9. So far, our predictions are not too great. All right. Here comes the next round of predictions. My prediction was that the 2022 Cyclones will have the best rotation since the 2012 rotation. And that was a big nope.
Yeah.
But I probably should have, like, looked at the stats first, which I did not, because there were a lot of Brooklyn Cyclones teams that, even though they didn't have like the as impressive numbers, they were still really good. I mean, 2013, 2014, 2016, 2018, and 2019 all had starters with better ERAs. Only last year was worse, 2015 and 2017. So, big no. Lucas, your next one is a big no.
Oh, boy.
You predicted that Dominic Hamill was going to be an elite relief prospect by the end of the season.
I didn't expect that.
I almost feel I deserve a push for this because I thought they would. My counterpoint to this would be that if he had been moved to the bullpen, he might still be that because he looked quite good as a starter by the end of it. But I will accept the L if that's what is deemed appropriate.
I mean, he appeared in 25 games and 24 of them were starts, so.
Right. I guess we're deciding which part. Like, I wasn't predicting necessarily that he would move to the bullpen. I just thought he would. But I understand your point. I'm still pretty pleased with what my general sentiment there, that Dominic Hamill is good. And I like Dominic Hamill.
Yeah, he had a 3.25 ERA in 119 innings, 83 hits allowed, 54 walks. You know, he led the league, the system in strikeouts, like we discussed before, the 145. Definitely a B to B plus minimum season. I mean, really, just kind of control wasn't the best, and that's really the only issue.
Mm-hmm. And he was also really a cost saving pick, so. I'm pretty pleased with where he's headed.
Mm-hmm. All right. Ken, your prediction was that Francisco Alvarez is a top five prospect in baseball heading into the 2023 season.
Holy shit, Ken. Could you have the lottery numbers by any chance?
I mean, none of these are bold. He was top 10 preseason.
Well, Fangraphs ranked him one. MLB Prospect Pipeline has him ranked one. Baseball Prospectus has him two. And Baseball America has him six as of like their most recent updates, which is, I guess, post draft. So you definitely got that one right.
Nope.
Thomas, you said that Eric Orsi would become an important member of the 2022 Mets' bullpen.
Well, you see.
You see pitching prospects.
Yeah.
He unfortunately did not. There was some injury issues.
There was some forgot-how-to-pitch issues.
Home run victimization issues. And, of course, the biggest problem with him becoming an important member of the Mets' bullpen is that he was not called up to the Mets. So maybe next year.
I feel like he righted the ship by the end. Like, yeah. I think sometimes, especially for pitching prospects, you just have a lost season.
It also piles up on you, I'm sure, because you're a prospect and you know you're probably really close to getting called up logically. Like, you could just kind of look at it and be like, hey, I'd be next. They probably know. And then you start getting lit up and you're like, well, shit, I'm not going to get called up next this way. And then it just snowballs from there. And, you know.
I mean, the Oka call-up could have just very as well been Eric Orsi if he was, you know, pitching a little bit better.
I mean, there was a few that I was like, hey, this could have been Orsi if he
That sucked.
Are you telling me you didn't want to see Adonis Medina for the fourth time?
That's what I'm saying. Like, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
We love us some Yoan Lopez.
Ugh.
All right, here are the last round of predictions. My prediction is that Matthew Allen will drop out of the top 10 prospect list next season. Informal poll, are you going to include him?
No.
I am not.
I will.
The players gotta play.
Come on, Ken. You gotta give an answer to give me some either validation here. All right, thank you. So, three or four of us say he's not going to be in our very informal list right now. Lucas, you are the only one. What? Why would you keep him there?
because I still don't think this system is particularly deep, and he probably has, like, if he gets back, basically, I need to see, let me reformat this thought a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. I will not stick a fork in him until I see nothing from him in the spring, right? If I see nothing from him in the spring, okay, you've had 2 years to recover from this, you're still not back, we're done here.
That's fair.
Because we make the list before that, in my mind, his stock is definitely down, don't get me wrong, but he still has as much, if not more, upside than any pitching prospect in the system not named Blake Tidwell, I would think, which is not saying much in this system, of course, but, like, I still think there's something there. I'm not 100% sure he's going to be towards the back of my top 10, but... Yeah, so I'm not, like, pledging to do this, but I think he'll make it. Come what may in the spring, that may change pretty quickly.
Mm. Your next prediction included a pitching prospect.
Oh, fuck.
Your prediction,
I remember this one, too.
Yep. Joel Diaz was going to be a top 100 prospect in baseball by the end of the season.
Why does Amazing Avenue pay me to do this again? Not 100% sure, frankly.
Hey, Liz, he didn't have a bad season. It just wasn't a particularly great season, and suffice to say, it was not top 100 prospect level. But
certainly,
I mean,
not.
He kind of got better as the year went on. He's still super young. He had a 5.86 ERA. In 55.1 innings, 62 hits allowed, 25 walks, 51 strikeouts. You know, that there's definitely a lot of potential there. If it could be harnessed, then yeah, he could in theory become a top prospect in all baseball, but this year was not the year, unfortunately.
I blame Baseball America for this.
Ken, your prediction is that Brett Beatty hits 35 home runs across all levels in 2022. And unfortunately, he did not. No. He hit 19 in 86 games at Binghamton. He hit none in 6 games at Syracuse. And then he hit 2 in 11 games at the Mets. So he had a total of 21. But that is basically almost double the output of home runs that he had last season. So, you know, upward trajectory is good.
What does that pace out to? If he had gotten... No, he'd still be... He might have gotten to 30 if he had stayed healthy.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, he missed an underratedly long amount of time.
Yeah. Yeah. Ken just hitting on all cylinders here. Next year's list will be written entirely by Ken, because apparently he's the only one who knows what the hell he's talking about.
Well, this last prediction, Thomas's last prediction, involves Ken's boy, Francisco Alvarez.
Mm-hmm.
And Thomas predicted that Francisco Alvarez was going to be the third catcher on the Mets death chart by 2023. Hard to judge, but I mean, honestly, he could be the first catcher on the Mets death
chart. So if I'm remembering it correctly, I think I was saying that he was going to, like, DH and on the major league roster type thing and be the third catcher, which is kind of what he's doing literally right now. But I don't think he's only going to catch, I think, if they lose today and the rest of the games don't matter because the Braves are not getting swept by Miami. We're recording on Sunday, but yeah, that's probably going to happen. He might start the season in the majors, but I think they carry three catchers, and I think they should if he is the DH.
So, I mean, a lot of these are things that, you know, hard to, like, conclusively say, like, yes or no. Like, you know, a lot of them did not include numbers, but I feel like we did better this year than last year. I feel like last year we were just, like, really, everyone was off except for, like, Ken again. So that's good, I guess.
Because I feel like Ken, like, really thinks about it. and I'm just like, you know what? What if Eric Orsi's the closer?
I mean, the key is to just choose things that are likely to happen.
Yeah, but that's less fun for me in the moment.
Francisco Alvarez is, you know, was a top 10 prospect in baseball, if he had a reasonably good season with graduations, yeah, it's probably going to happen. Basically, I figured the Mets wouldn't call him up as early enough for him to eat.
Weirdly, they should have and fucked your prediction over. making the rest of us look bad here, frankly.
Freaking Epler, freaking Sandy. Well, those are our predictions. And come next March, there will be some equally wacky ones.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I can't wait to say Kevin Parada splits time evenly between left field and catcher. And then he plays one game in one half inning in the outfield or whatever.
Two-thirds of an inning. Jet Williams will be the top prospect in the system by the end of next season.
Jet Williams ends the season 6'5". It's going to be one of my predictions.
Jet Williams disappears somehow for 2 years to go get that weird leg lengthening surgery that all the rich, weird white dudes do in Las Vegas or whatever. Shit, maybe that's where Matt Allen is right now. He's going to come back 7 feet tall.
Matt Allen comes back left-handed, is the best pitching prospect in the Mets system.
How tall is Matt Allen already? I'm looking this up. He was a
probably
big boy.
Probably 6'3".
Yeah, I think he was pretty
6'3".
Tall.
So Matt Allen's going to come back 6'8".
That would be, if you got that prediction right, you would, I don't know what you would win, but.
Going to come back as a 6'8 pitcher who has lost all his power stuff, basically becoming the second version of Josh Provost.
Hey, he's had a decent career so far. I mean, he's had a better career than Matthew Allen has had just by virtue of actually making it, so.
True.
Why not? All right, well.
Such a dead zone for us, little minor.
Yeah, I know. Well, now that we're heading into the off season, we'll start getting, you know, we'll have the reviews and stuff, but then we can start doing, like, the fun things.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means right now, but I'll have to think about it. But if anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you can email us at our email address from complextoqueens@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Sipa. Lucas is at ElVlahos343. Ken is at Ken1191. And Thomas is at SadMetSeason, SZN. Subscribe to the podcast, wherever you get your podcast from, rate and review it. And of course, we thank you for listening. And we will be back next week. So until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.